It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Security is very tight here in Singapore. Security is tight no matter when the president or where the president of the United States travel. But then you put on the added layer of security required when the leader of North Korea travels. Kim Jong-un touched down here a short while ago. When he landed in Singapore, it was the third country that Kim has been to since assuming leadership of North Korea in 2011. He has traveled twice to China and stepped over the demilitarized zone line into South Korea to meet the South Korean President Moon Jae-in. So it is unusual for a North Korean leader to be so far from home, and security is a particular concern for North Korea. The United States and North Korea chose Singapore in part because it has hosted international summits before. They've got the security routine down, and to be honest, secure routine here, or the routine security here, is already robust. The country has closed certain areas of the city, and there is tight security throughout much of it. Police say they have already arrested South Korean journalists, claiming that those journalists were trespassing on the North Korean ambassador's property. The president and Kim Jong-un will meet on a secluded, exclusive resort here. It's on an island just off the coast of mainland Singapore. As for the expectations of this summit and what would qualify as a successful summit, well, the president says that it could be anywhere from just establishing a good rapport, a good relationship with Kim Jong-un, to something bigger than that. Though the president has noted that if he feels that this summit will not be a success, that he will not waste his time nor Kim Jong-un's.
Okay, so that was Rich Hetson on Fox News. I thought that was kind of a nice overview of what's happening. This really, if this were not the only thing happening in national news, it would be huge. Kim Jong-il getting ready to meet with the president of the United States after years and years and years of tensions, especially over their potential nuclear capabilities, threatening us, lying about us, using us really to their school children and to their people as I think it's hard to fathom, but the Kim regime, along with his father and his grandfather, painted Americans always as the greatest enemy of North Korea and whipped their people into a frenzy. And their people, of course, don't have any source of information besides their government. And so it's just very dangerous. You've just got an island or a peninsula, the northern part of Korea, just boiling, starving, inadequate services and no electricity for the most part, freezing in the winters, but thinking that their government, you know, is, well, I guess for the most part, thinking that their government's telling them the truth, that America is at fault. This is America's fault that they're hungry. So this has been happening. We've had tremendous tension with them. It's gone back and forth. No president has ever been willing to deal with it except for sending money, like payoffs to shut them off. Money that Kim Jong-un and his father and his grandfather all used to indulge themselves while their people starved. It's just been an endless dance of disaster, really. And honestly, I don't know what this is going to do to the North Korean people. I did read an article this morning that the North Korean public, based on some people who are now able to be there, there was a time where no reporters were able to be in North Korea. They are talking about news sources are just not talking about this. The people don't really know in North Korea what's going on. And I can attest to the way it is there. I've told you before many times I was in North Korea the day 9/11 of 2001, and we heard nothing. We were there for 24 hours. I didn't know about that horrible tragedy in our country and in the world, the life-changing event for all of us, until the next day when we went back in northern Manchuria because North Korea doesn't have any outlets for information. Now, that's changed somewhat because of this North Korea Freedom Coalition, which I used to be the chairman of, has organized and been very successful at getting these radios dropped by balloon and other methods into North Korea, and people are actually now, they've set up what's kind of the equivalent to Radio Free Europe. It's not Radio Free Europe. A lot of Christian programming, but a lot of information. So things are shifting and changing. I'm not sure, you know, what's going to happen to the people who have suffered so much under the reign of these three Kims. I just don't know what's going to happen with them. And maybe we can have a more lengthy discussion at some point about that with people who are on the ground there or closer to it, who can sort of predict what we might see. Nevertheless, this spectacle is taking place in the next 24 hours. And really, it is it's a very important moment in the world's history, really. I think, was it Lindsey Graham said yesterday, it will either be an agreement or war. And he may not be wrong about that. So, meanwhile, the president has just left this G7 conference, the G7 conference in which that used to be the G8, but Russia is no longer invited. And so, I want you to hear some of the sound from that, because I think President Trump does as good a job of explaining himself on the controversial tariff issue than just about anyone that I can think of. In fact, I want to skip ahead a little bit here, Adam. Let's go down to clip 7, because he's asked by a reporter about the tariffs, and I think he does a good job of kind of laying this out. Let's listen.
This was a positive meeting, but from the outside it seemed quite contentious. Did you get any indication from your interlocutors that they were going to make any concessions to you? And I believe that you raised the idea of a tariff-free G7. Is that
I did. Oh, I did. That's the way it should be. No tariffs, no barriers. That's the way it should be. And no subsidies. I even said no tariffs. In other words, let's say Canada, where we have tremendous tariffs. The United States pays tremendous tariffs on dairy, as an example, 270%. Nobody knows that. We pay nothing. We don't want to pay anything. Why should we pay? We have to. Ultimately, that's what you want. You want a tariff-free, you want no barriers, and you want no subsidies, because you have some cases where countries are subsidizing industries, and that's not fair. So you go tariff-free, you go barrier-free, you go subsidy-free. That's the way you learned at the Wharton School of Finance. I mean, that would be the ultimate thing. Now, whether or not that works, but I did suggest it, and people were, I guess they're going to go back to the drawing board and check it out, right? But we can't have an example where we're paying, the United States has paying 270%. Just can't have it. And when they send things into us, you don't have that. I will say it was not contentious. What was strong was the language that this cannot go on. But the relationships are very good, whether it be President Macron or with Justin. Justin did a really good job.
All right, that's just first part of it. I want you to hear the second part before I weigh in on this. He goes on to sort of underscore what he thinks has happened in the last many decades to the American government and the negotiations that have taken place. Let's listen.
I think the relationships were outstanding, but because of the fact that the United States leaders of the past didn't do a good job on trade, and again, I'm not blaming countries, I'm blaming our people that represented our past. It's got to change. It's going to change. I mean, it's not a question of I hope it changes. It's going to change 100%. And tariffs are going to come way down, because people cannot continue to do that. We're like the piggy bank that everybody's robbing, and that ends.
Yeah, I think that's just as clear as it can be. He's basically saying he's not in favor of tariffs. He doesn't think there should be tariffs. Anybody, we should have honestly, truly free trade. Government should not be subsidizing so that their workers can sell their goods for far less and not be a fair market value on the world's trading block. And so he says that we've been the brunt of all of this. We have all kinds of unfair trade practices aimed at us. It has hurt our farmers. It has hurt our manufacturing. Do we not know this? Do we have to be convinced of this? I don't think so. And so his attempt, he's trying to rectify that and turn it around. But of course, he has a lot of enemies who are at him on this whole business of tariffs. It was interesting to hear an exchange between the president and a reporter at the conference. And I just want you to hear it. Let's listen. Clip 5.
As you were heading into these G7 talks, there was a sense that
that America's closest allies were frustrated with you and angry with you, and that you were angry with them, and that you were leaving here early to go meet for more friendlier talks with Kim Jong-un in Singapore. And I'm wondering if you view it the same way, and do you view the U.S. alliance system shifting under your presidency away?
Who are you with, out of curiosity?
CNN.
I figured. Fake news, CNN. The worst. But, you know, I could tell by the question. I have no idea you were CNN after the question. I was just curious as to who you're with. You were CNN. I would say that the level of relationship is a 10. We have a great relationship. Angela and Emmanuel and Justin. I would say the relationship is a 10. And I don't blame them. I blame, as I said, I blame our past leaders for allowing this to happen. There was no reason this should happen. There's no reason that we should have big trade deficits with virtually every country in the world. I'm going long beyond the G7. There's no reason for this. It's the fault of the people that preceded me. And I'm not just saying President Obama. I'm going back a long way. You can go back 50 years, frankly. It just got worse and worse and worse. You know, we used to be a nation that was unbelievably cash flow oriented, had no debt of any consequence, and they'd build the highway system. We built the interstate system out of cash flow. And it was a lot different. No, we have a very good relationship, and I don't blame these people, but I will blame them if they don't act smart and do what they have to do, because they have no choice. I'll be honest with you, they have no choice.
All right, that was the first part of his response. But, you know, the interesting thing about that to me is that President Trump did not respond, other than calling it fake news and saying it was a CNN reporter, to the snarky question, which basically said, is it true that, you know, you're leaving this summit early to go to more friendlier turf, meeting with Kim Jong-un? Of course, he's meeting with Britain, France, Germany, Japan, and Canada, and you know what the inference is. It was a very smart-aleck question, and the president responded by actually giving the reporter a better answer than he deserved by explaining why it is we're doing what we're doing. I'm sure you'll be hearing about the Justin Trudeau has been under attack by Larry Kudlow and other, financial advisor to the president, but they're very upset with Justin going public, sort of undermining the president in private conversations they had. Angela Merkel is reportedly upset. Well, they are upset. Of course, it's going to cost them money. It's going to cost them money to even things out and stop punishing Americans. And of course, they have enriched themselves upon our backs. They have. There's no question about it. Trust me, I've seen this personally traveling. We have gotten poor while they have enriched themselves because of these unfair practices. And I think the president is trying to fix that. Of course, the president has other enemies on this issue. John McCain's one of them. John McCain was helpful. He tweeted out, to our allies at the G7, bipartisan majorities of Americans remain pro-free trade, pro-globalization, and supportive of alliances based on 70 years of shared values. Americans stand with you, even if our president doesn't. That from Senator John McCain. Thank you, Mr. McCain. I want to just give you some other things quickly. The national debt in the last 2 months has actually dipped down under President Trump. Of course, regulations have been slashed, unnecessary regulations that were killing businesses. There's been a change in the tax structure. And so it's $36.3 billion that the deficit has gone down. But I think that's the first time the deficit's gone down, and I can't remember when. So that's pretty amazing. The other bit of news I wanted to tell you is that President Trump's approval rating is better than President Barack Obama and President Ronald Reagan at this very same time in their presidency. For President Reagan in June of 1982, it was 44%. For President Obama in June of 22, it was 44%. And for President Donald Trump in June of 2018, it is 45%. That's pretty amazing when you consider the round battering criticism that he gets all the time. There's so much more to say, and I'm going to try to say it. So I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, Congressman David Bratt will be joining us because the primary in Virginia is tomorrow. Also, Maine, North Dakota, Nevada, South Carolina. Heads up on that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Come join Sandy Rios for a walk back in time when she was a young grieving mom, discovering firsthand how God's strength is made perfect in weakness.
I'll be the song for you. I'll be the symphony.
The music of Sasha's song, Sandy Rios' first album project, is a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Would God sustain us?
Produced by John Ennis of the Billy Graham Crusade with members of the Indianapolis Orchestra, this beautiful music will lift your heart.
Like peering through a window blurred with rain, emotions run together in a flood of doubt and pain. For he is able.
Available on CD at afastore.net.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, we only go to the Holy Land once a year, and that's in March. Last year, we filled up several months in advance. So if you want to go in March of 2019, it's time to look at the details. You can get a brochure from us at 800-FAMILIES, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your telephone number, or go to TWHolyLand.com, TWHolyLand.com. It's going to be a wonderful time in Israel. We'll go to the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, the Holy City of Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Masada, the Dead Sea, and on the list goes. If you'd like to go with us in March of 2019, all the information is available at TWHolyLand.com. Order a brochure by calling 800-FAMILIES, option 5.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
While Republicans and Democrats squabble over how to deal with the illegal alien invasion, the rest of us are in grave danger. Consider what happened to preschool teacher Jessica Parks of Indianapolis. Ms. Parks was critically injured when she was run over by a car driven by an illegal alien. A bus driver and several Good Samaritans gave chase, were able to apprehend the woman, identified as Juana Nunez. But instead of holding the suspect for immigration officers, she was released. Let go! She nearly killed an American citizen on American soil, but the Marion County Sheriff's Department let her go. ICE agents are furious, and they should be. They say Marion County has no regard for the safety of its citizens. So let's review. An American was nearly killed by an illegal alien. Law-abiding citizens captured the illegal, but the Sheriff's Department just let her go. Remember that on Election Day, America. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And happy to have joining us one of our favorite congresspersons, one of mine. His name is Congressman Dave Brat. He represents the 6th District in Virginia. And there are a lot of reasons to talk to Congressman Brad. He's an economist. We could talk about the summit that we just spoke about. We could also talk about the amnesty attempt to pass amnesty in the House. We're going to do that. We could also talk about the investigation into Trump. We could talk about a lot of things. But just suffice it to say that I'm grateful when he makes time for us this morning. There is a primary in Virginia tomorrow, by the way. And let me, before he joins me, let me just take a couple of things. We'll let him talk about his own race, but let me just say there are a couple of big races there. I know that Barbara Comstock is the incumbent in Virginia's 10th Congressional District. Barbara has really disappointed a lot of people in Virginia, and some are calling her Beltway Barbara because she has really sold out in terms of, she used to be a solid conservative. I've known Barbara for years. But she's sort of fallen off the bandwagon for some reason, and she's being challenged now by a guy named Shaq Hill, who has the endorsement of Sebastian Gorka, Richard Viguerie, Brent Bozell, Justin Phillips of Tea Party Nation, Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America. And interesting thing about this, Vice President Pence is out campaigning for Barbara Comstock. I mean, that's not a good thing from my perspective, but you need to know that. That's why some of us are still concerned about Vice President Pence and his ties with the establishment. I'll mention one more race. There is a race between Scott Taylor, who is in the, Virginia District 2. Richard Viguerie writes that Representative Scott Taylor is a rhino and an arrogant self-promoter. He never seems to miss a chance to go on TV to push for amnesty or illegal aliens and trash conservatives and President Trump. Richard Viguerie thinks that Mary Jones is the best candidate in the June 12th Republican primary. Now, I don't know about that. I'm just telling you what they're saying. And by the way, we have a great voter guide. It's go to AFAaction.net, AFAaction.net. In fact, we'll put it on our Facebook page again today so you can check the candidates out and vote accordingly. Okay, so long introduction. Congressman Brett, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much, Sandy. Yeah, I'm glad you, the immigration I'll just cover is the most pressing one because tomorrow is the deadline, and you won't believe who set the deadline. There's 25 Republicans working with 200 Democrats bypassing, going over the president and Paul Ryan and McCarthy and Scalise and basically making a deal with Democrats. They put in a discharge petition that has this procedure called Queen of the Hill. There are four bills. The one that gets the most votes wins. And guess what's going to get the most votes with 200 Democrats? A clean amnesty for 10 million people over 10 years. And so we've worked all year on the Goodlatte bill. It's good policy that it has E-Verify, et cetera. And the most important thing for people to realize is that if you don't get the policy right, you'll just have another DACA in 5 years, right? If you just simply do trade a wall alone, right, without immigration policy in exchange for DACA, you'll have this exact same problem for as long as you can imagine. And so that's the bottom line on immigration. So people need to light up their phones, and leadership can end this all, right? All they need to do is put in the Goodlatte bill, and that's the end of it. It all goes away, but they haven't done that, and they're letting this small group hold the entire Republican Party hostage for some reason.
Yes, and I think that the contrast between the way you conservatives, members of the Freedom Caucus and others, have been treated by this leadership in the past, punished for sort of trying to push things that the leadership didn't want, and the group, this group, that has started this discharge petition is pretty remarkable. Would you not agree?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's stunning. The Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan says it as well as anybody, right? And he is going to be running for speaker. But he says our group just keeps our promises. We don't run on amnesty, right? We run on the opposite. We run on a strong border security, et cetera. And we always run on the Republican platform. When some folks in the party go astray from Republican platform ideas, we try to hold them accountable. This is the exact opposite. And we get punished for doing that. Here you got a group of 25 Republicans pushing Democrat policy, and we'll see what happens if there's any pushback on them. But right now they have leadership in a pickle, and they're exerting leverage over leadership. It's just stunning.
Well, of course, I would argue that leadership is getting what leadership actually has wanted for a long time, and Paul Ryan has nothing to lose. He can pretend, aw, shucks, I don't want this to happen all he wants, but this is what he's been pushing for a long time. So it's kind of like, and this is my statement, it seems to me like a big Christmas present to him to get amnesty as he's going out. And I just think it's a travesty, and I think people need to understand. Now, I've been out of town, David. I did not know that there were 25 Republicans now on the discharge petition. So it has enough to, they can bring it to the floor without leadership's permission,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, okay. They have way more than 25, so they've just been holding them. They have 10 more, easy, or 20 that will do it, but they're holding it till Tuesday. And you're right, I just want to highlight one other thing. The Chamber of Commerce, right, we already allow over a million legal immigrants in the country. They want another million. They just stated a few days ago.
So, you know, and my understanding is that this particular You know, I realize it's changing, it has different iterations, but the bill that will likely come out of this discharge petition would legalize really 7 million DACA recipients because of family ties and chain migration and all of it. So really, honestly, we're talking about a nightmare here that's happening kind of quietly. I don't even think Fox is talking about it very much because Fox is not all concerned about this issue. Some hosts are, but most are not. And so this is I don't know how many battles like this I have watched through the years, but there have been plenty. And I've never seen them prevail, but it looks like they may win on this one, Congressman. I mean, now, let me ask you this. Is the smartest thing for people to call their individual congressman, or should they call leadership and concentrate their efforts?
Both, and probably more important is just to write about it in your local regional papers, right? So the people, right, this is the issue that separates, right, the cronies from the average American. And even Bernie was concerned with this kind of thing, right, with this cheap labor argument. So you got a chance to win over some Democrat friends and say, hey, are you going this way for real? You're going to hurt the American worker with this cheap labor? And so it's a chance to communicate and win. The elites are getting their way as of right now. And then President Trump has to stand up and go in public and declare what's going on here. I mean, he can lead and stop this thing in its tracks right now, too. And so I hope he understands what's going on here, right? If this bill actually got traction and starts going through the House and the Senate, our base will stay home, and then we're going to have all sorts of problems.
Which might be the point. Which might be the point. It's just amazing because I do think the argument could be made, and I've made it, that leadership doesn't care really who wins next year as long as they remain in their positions. I don't think they care that much about minority status. That's my read on it. And so it is really the American people, once again, pitted against our representatives in the House and the Senate. Not the Senate yet, but they're not going to help us. If it gets to the Senate, they're not going to be helpful.
No, right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So the bottom line is, in addition to paying attention to the primary tomorrow, because we need to get these really rotten congressmen out. So I'm asking all of you in those states, Maine, North Carolina, Virginia, Nevada, and South Carolina, this is your time tomorrow to throw the bums out. So go on AofAAction.net, find out how they voted, and act accordingly. I'm begging you again. One other thing, Congressman, this whole movement of which I am very much a part of, too, trying to make it possible for Congressman Jim Jordan to be Speaker of the House. Can you say anything about where that stands?
Right now, there is no Speaker, so he's not, you know, in a race yet. But when the time comes, I think he said that he's willing to step up. And, you know, I mean, he's just done great policy and led on everything, this FBI investigation and all the issues there. And he's been on the TV every night defending the American people. So there's not a better guy you're going to get. And so, again, what he needs more than anything is just the national surge of the American people saying, hey, we want Jim Jordan for Speaker because he'd be fantastic.
Yeah, he absolutely would. And I contrast him with Trey Gowdy and Paul Ryan, who in the last 10 days both have weighed in publicly, I think ridiculously. I've played the clips in regard to the investigation, Trey Gowdy saying the FBI acted just the way the American people would want them to act. I mean, that, and then Paul Ryan weighing in pretty much to say the same thing. And by the way, Congressman, I don't know if you realize or not, but when Paul Ryan said that no one is above the law, well, of course, that's a great phrase, and we believe that. But that is the byline for MoveOn.org. That is the campaign they have in place to destroy the president. It's called No One is Above the Law. Paul Ryan, the Republican Speaker of the House, is channeling George Soros, MoveOn.org, which is just shocking to me.
I don't get that either because Kim Strassel from the Wall Street Journal reported on there. The embedded person from the FBI in the campaign. And so did the New York Times. So I don't get where the mystery is when you got the New York Times weighing in that we got problems here. I don't get what these guys are doing there.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I could fill in a blank, but we'll just kind of leave it dangling. So the point is we've got to get some good people in. And then for Speaker, Jim Jordan is the guy who just needs to be that next guy. Congressman, last word from you. Just the one thing you want to communicate further.
Yeah. If people can just follow me, help me out in my race going forward, I'm at davebratt.com, B-R-A-T. We're making headway on all sorts of great issues in the district. If you want to follow, we're working on the opioid, the human trafficking, the depression and suicide issues with our pastors. We had 150 faith leaders in the room last week when I was home. And so we're making good progress. And if people want to follow what I'm doing, just go to davebratt.com. If they can support me, that's great. If they got volunteers in the area, that's great. I'm an outspoken person on your show and on the Fox News and everything. And so Tim Kaine and Terry McAuliffe and the Democrats are gonna come after me. And so if I have the American people, I won big with no money and the American people. But this time, I'm going to have a machine coming after me, and that makes it different.
Yeah, it does. It makes it very hard, and it's also kind of dangerous, you know. But all right, so listen, it's great to talk to you. I know you have to run, but thank you always for your time. And tomorrow now, there's no primary for you tomorrow, right?
Nope. I'm good tomorrow, and so that's just going forward. I was at the front page of the Washington Post 3 weeks ago, right? Why am I on the front page of the Washington Post? It's hit. And so that's what's going on coming up, and so I'll need the people's prayers and support going forward.
Yes, I know. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, too. All right, Congressman Brett, have a great day, and go into Congress.
God bless, Sandy.
Yeah, God bless you, too. We'll talk to you soon. All right, well, you know what? There aren't that many men like that serving, and precious few women. I can't think of one right now who has the kind of courage and steadfastness. They have all compromised. I'm not crazy about the women of Congress. But there are a few men now who, and most of them are in the Freedom Caucus, not all of them, but most of them, and they really do deserve our support in every way we can give it. And so please go online and be responsible and find out who's running. If you have friends in Maine or North Dakota or Virginia or Nevada or South Carolina, share information. Maybe we'll open up the phone lines tomorrow morning because it will be primary day. But don't wait that long. I mean, sometimes, it helps to call somebody that you know and trust. I used to have people call me all the time in Illinois. Sandy, tomorrow's election day. What do you think? Who do you think? What do you think about these candidates? Because they knew I was watching it, and I was happy to help them. And so sometimes it's a matter of calling someone that you trust who's kind of clued in or tied in and maybe can give you some guidance. So just don't be passive about it, okay? We're all in this together. And by God's grace, maybe we can sort this thing out. I want to tell you a couple of other really important things that happened this past 10 days while I was gone. By the way, I want to thank Fred Jackson for filling in for me last week. Thank you, Fred. I know he does a great job. I listened one day, and he did do a great job, so I have no doubt about that. And I hope you enjoyed some of the shows that we aired and replayed. I'm just very grateful to have Fred's help. I was able, competent, professional help when I'm out of town. This is a couple of things that happened that I think are huge, and I want to make sure you knew about them. For one thing, the Justice Department under Jeff Sessions has declared that they will not defend Obamacare in court. Okay, so the background on this, and I hope to do a longer segment on this on a different day, but several attorneys general have filed a suit to overturn Obamacare. Because you may remember that when John Roberts, as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, cast the deciding vote making it constitutional, allegedly, he actually did a sort of a very unprecedented thing in that he changed the mandate into what he called a tax. Well, in the course of this last several years now, Congress actually overturned the part of the bill that he was terming a tax, the mandate. And therefore, there's nothing left that would say that the remaining parts of this bill are constitutional. So the Justice Department under Jeff Sessions has said very clearly they will not defend Obamacare in court. And so these attorneys general are suing to have it overturned. So if our Congress won't do what's right, other people in the states who are taking responsibility may do it. And our attorney general, who's doing really many things that this is one of them that you're not hearing about. Also, Attorney General Sessions was a big factor in that a cake baking case that came out of the Supreme Court last week. He's doing some great things, just so you know. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I am the vine. You are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. If we have an electrical device that is well-crafted, sleek, built to accomplish a task, yet the device remains unplugged from the power socket, you may be able to do a lot with it, but it won't function as designed. That describes much of the church today. Busyness is not synonymous with effectiveness. The church's effectiveness will only come as we abide in the vine.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
American Family Coffee is coffee with a cause. Not only is it a delicious way to start your day, but it can also wake you up to the idea of supporting the American Family Association through a product you'd normally buy anyway. And you know, there's almost nothing as wholesome and basic to American culture as a good cup of coffee. Choose from morning blend, evening blend, and everything in between. Get your American Family Coffee and support the American Family Association at afastore.net.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others every day on AFR.
Hi, I'm Will Addison.
And I'm Miki Addison of Aaron the Addisons on Urban Family Talk. Family is so important to everything. I mean, think about it. Right after God created Adam, he made family by creating Eve as his wife.
We'd like to invite you to the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference this summer. We'll have a full slate of experts to help encourage and equip the body of Christ to fight for the restoration of the family.
Our speakers include Ryan Bomberger of the Radiance Foundation, Dr. Clarence Schuler of Building Lasting Relationships, Abraham Hamilton III, Pastor Bert Harper and his wife Jan, and more.
We'll even be there.
The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference will be Friday and Saturday, August 17th and 18th at Hope Church in Tupelo, Mississippi. Come help us fight back against the enemy's direct attack on marriage and family. That's the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference put on by Urban Family Communications, a division of the American Family Association. You can learn more and register at urbanfamilytalk.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secured Freedom Minute. President Trump will soon sit down with one of the world's most brutal and dangerous dictators. Neglecting that reality in the interest of getting some deal will likely perpetuate rather than eliminate the threat posed by Kim Jong-un. President Trump has made clear that he seeks nothing less than the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of Kim's regime. Yet, the pressure to settle for less, or at least to defer such an outcome to future negotiations, will be intense. The only real hope for success, therefore, is to establish that the talks are grounded in reality. The Chinese are encouraging and enabling North Korea to remain intransigent and slow roll, Mr. Trump. So, the president must double down by insisting that Kim not only end his nuclear weapons program, but also the barbaric mistreatment of his people favored by China. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
FBI did exactly what my fellow citizens would want them to do when they got the information they got, and that it has nothing to do with Donald Trump.
Well, thank you, Congressman Groudy. I played that before I left and was pretty disgusted when I heard it. And I explained to you in detail, which I will as often as I need to, that he has been a tremendous disappointment. I recognize that many of you have really liked Trey and you thought that he was really doing something. And I guess the best way to explain it is how friends of mine on Capitol Hill would explain it, is that Trey Gowdy is all hat and no cattle. He says a lot of things, but he does a lot of, or doesn't do, a lot of really bad things. Remember, Trey Gowdy was there when Lois Lerner got off the hook He was the overseer of the Benghazi hearing only because many of us pushed to force the House to even hold a hearing on Benghazi. That happened probably at least a year after the actual incident. And when Trey gaveled the committee hearing to session, he refused to hear from literally dozens of people who had information that they would not have known about the Benghazi attack, including people who had been severely injured, whose names you never heard, who were given John Doe names in hospitals around D.C., who were made to sign non-disclosure agreements about what they had seen in Benghazi. He wasn't interested in that, among other things. So, you know, but he certainly sounded like he was very serious and he got some zingers in, but I don't know what the problem is. I can't explain it, but that's what I'm telling you. Daryl Issa was the same way. Remember how Daryl Issa had such great things to say? I mean, he could really, you can see as a prosecutor how he, you know, he had the words, but all hat and no cattle. And so we've got to find men who will actually, as I've said before, we need to look at what they do, not what they say. Look at what people do, not what they say. That's why when the people criticize President Trump for all the careless things he says, and he certainly does say careless things, they should look at what he does and not so much about what he says. And I think that's true at both ends of the spectrum. And speaking of the FBI, all right, so Trey got a day. The FBI did simply what the American people would want them to do. Really? Truly? Really? Is that why, McCabe is asking, for immunity? Because he knows he did everything just perfectly? I don't think so. The affair between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok and all of those back and forth texts and the insurance plan they talk about and how POTUS wants to keep informed about everything, President Obama knew about all of this. Nobody wants to talk about that, by the way. But the FBI, remember, because Trey Gowdy said so, they did exactly what the American people would want them to do. And then, of course, with this spy, this informant, whatever you want to call it, Kimberly Strassel, among many others, is one of the ones that broke that story. We know it was a professor. I can't think of his name in this very minute. I should be able to. They didn't name his name for a long time. But he actually set up the young Alex Papadopoulos, the young staffer in his 20s, with the Trump team when he was running for election. He set him up. He gave him $3,000, asking to write a paper, this kid, and then paid for his way to go to London and then set up meetings with him so that he could be used in this plot. That was the FBI. But of course, now remember, they're just, according to Trey Gowdy, acting the way we would want them to act, right? Yeah, maybe not so much. And as a matter of fact, I know that there are a lot of FBI agents who would love to testify. They have stories to tell about what they've seen and things that have really disturbed them about what they've seen from their leadership. But they don't have the same whistleblower protections as other whistleblowers from other agencies. And so many of them are afraid to come forward because they feel it will be, logically, are afraid that they will lose their jobs and thus their income for their families and their futures. And for the most part, FBI agents are not, they're not exactly wealthy men. Maybe the leadership is because for whatever reason, the powers that be started this practice, certainly with Robert Mueller, and also with James Comey, of bringing people in who were millionaire former attorneys, or working in the corporate world, like Bob Mueller, who no experience at all with the FBI or being an agent. That's one thing that Bob Mueller did. He came in, made the FBI a corporate structure, and brought in all the political correctness that he was so familiar with in the corporate world. But I'm off the path for a second here. Let me just say the whistleblower protections are not the same for FBI agents. And so because they're just regular men and women who are supporting their families, it's hard for them to come forward and put their career and their futures in jeopardy. But so they're asking Congress to subpoena them. Many of them are just kind of behind the scenes saying, so call us to testify. That would be different. And so we're kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. But I'm sure, you know, they have nothing to say because, as Trey Gowdy told us, the FBI only did what the American people would want them to do. So I'm sure that all the people that want to come forward in the FBI really have nothing to say, or they're disgruntled, right? Because we know that James Comey is a man of integrity. So was Bob Mueller, right? That's what they all told us. Trey Gowdy promised that over and over again. So did Mitch McConnell. Yeah, he's a man of integrity. I fully trust Robert Mueller. Yeah, well, thank you, gentlemen, for that misleading information. And so that's the status. Now, here's an interesting bit that I wanted to share with you. Bill Priestap is a name that's not quite as familiar, but he was the FBI Director of Counterintelligence. Peter Strzok worked for him. And so Bill Priestap came in and testified to a joint session of the House Judiciary and House Oversight Committees just last week. Now, where was it? It was in the House. What was it? It was a joint session of the House Judiciary and the House Oversight Committees. Guess how many people came to that committee hearing out of those two House committees? Well, gee, only three. And guess who they were? Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, and a Democrat, Krishnamurti. Krishnamurti. The three of them showed up. Raja Krishnamurti is a Democrat from Illinois. They came to hear the FBI Director of Counterintelligence, who was all over this, who knows more than probably Peter Strzok, because he was his boss. So three congressmen came. Guess who wasn't there? Well, let's see. The chairman of the Oversight Committee, Trey Gowdy, didn't bother to come, and neither did Chairman Bob Goodlatte, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. They didn't come because, you know, wasn't that important. Well, it was the Monday after a holiday, and you know how Congress is. That's, you know, it can't come in early on those days. And so that's how it went down. Now, that doesn't mean it didn't have any, I don't know what happened. It was behind closed doors. I can't give you any more information than that, other than who didn't come and who did come. Congressman Jim Jordan, Congressman Mark Meadows, and Congressman Raja Krishnamurti, Democrat from Illinois. So that's kind of the way things go in Washington. That's why tomorrow's a primary, and you might want to know that. Mightn't ya want to know that? Okay, about who's coming and who isn't, doing their job and who isn't. All right, so here's a huge story that came out, broke last Thursday night. I'll never forget when it came into my inbox that a staffer, the guy in charge of intelligence, you know, that famous Gang of Eight they always throw around. They're so powerful and so trustworthy. The Gang of Eight, meaning four people from Senate and four from the House, who are charged with the very serious, somber duty of overseeing the nation's intelligence. Every agency, the highest level of intelligence, the highest, deepest level of knowledge about what's going on. And guess who was handling it? Well, they all have staffers. Don't think that the senators sit there and handle all this stuff. They have staffers. And there are really young staffers. Most of them are generally really young. And then there are some who are not so young. James Wolf is not so young. I think he's 60-ish. I'll find out when I'm reading this. But James Wolf has been with them for 29 years. He's been serving. And he is the staffer trusted with all that information that comes from all those intelligence agencies. And he is the staffer that works with the Senate Intelligence Committee. Do you remember me telling you, remember Robert, what's his name? Names. The two heads of the committee are from North Carolina. What's his name? Bird? I'm sorry, I'm just blanking out. And then also from Mark, I'm sorry, the names, I'll find him in a second. Mark Warner from Virginia. And it's not Robert Byrd. That's what's tripping me up here. But it's the senator from North Carolina that I often criticize, but can't think of his name to properly criticize him in this moment. But it has been described as the most corrupt committee in the Senate. That's how I've heard it described. Well, now maybe we know why. Because James Wolf, 29-year veteran, 60-ish years old, was having an affair with a college student named Allie Watkins. Allie was a reporter. She was actually still in school when they started this affair. And he, it looks as though it might be, we don't know for sure. We know that he was arrested Thursday night for lying to the FBI three times. Now, that's the charge. And of course, that's not a great strong charge because it seems like the FBI is using that to snag people left and right, like General Flynn. And it can be used in a bad way. But it seems as though, it appears as though, we're going to find out if it's true, that James Wolfe passed top secret information to Allie Watkins, who just happened to be at the same time that he was the head of the intelligence, or running, managing all the intelligence information for that committee, and all their witnesses, and all that private testimony, that she just happened to be writing about it. And had what some have described a meteoric rise in her career. She moved from BuzzFeed to Politico and now to the New York Times. Just an amazing, amazing how this young girl had all this information. Well, it turns out from their texts and their phone messages that, yeah, he was helping her a lot. We do know that. He talks at one point about how I'm trying to give you everything. It kind of helps me. It's fun to watch you advance as I'm trying to get you everything you need to help you advance, something to that effect. And so now this is all coming from the Justice Department led by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. You remember that he said a long time ago he was going to get to the bottom of these leaks. And part of the leaks that we believe it's very likely that James Wolfe made it to his love, 30 years younger than he is. You know, I just stop and think about that. Anyway, Allie Watkins was with him for 4 years. And one of the things she wrote about extensively was Carter Page. How she was the first one to report that some campaign official of Donald Trump was meeting with Russians. You know, of course, put in the worst possible light, as I've said to you before, lots of people were meeting with Russians. Since the Soviet Union broke up, everybody that does business has met with Russians. But of course, at the time that it was reported, she gave details that she shouldn't have. And so once again, it's just amazing how corrupt the system is. And I don't tell you that to discourage you. I tell you that so that you can be made aware. Because I feel like, you know, I know that it's true. If we can shed light on all of this nefarious business, and if you can put the fear of God, really, and God is a righteous God who believes, you know, he's a God of right and wrong, this is a wrong thing. You know, for a man to have an affair with a girl 30 years younger, and then for her to use information, top secret. Do you know that when you get top secret clearance in the United States of America, that that's a sacred trust? Do you know you don't leak it to your 30-year-old, you know, your 18-year-old girlfriend, 19, 20-year-old girlfriend so that she can become a star reporter? That is not allowed. You can't do that. And this kind of stuff happens in D.C. all the time. Trust me, the power there of these older men over younger women, and younger women more than willing to play this game in order to advance their careers. This is how it goes. It's a breakdown, a societal breakdown. And so we're trying to stop that. And I think with God's help, we could do that. Of course, when you start talking about that, that means you have to clean up your own lives too. You do know that as Christians, right? It's holy living. It's taking all of our mind and our thoughts under captivity and taking on the mind of Christ. And that's not that much of a quantum leap from holding Washington accountable for some things like this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.